It's Wednesday, the 6th of November. Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable on WAMC. I'm Ray Graff, in for Joe Donahue. In this hour, we will start off with our Roundtable panel. We'll talk about today's news topics with Capital New York senior reporter Jimmy Vielkind and University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo. Later in the big show, we'll speak with Sandra Boynton about her latest CD book project, Frog Trouble. Carter Allen will talk about the rise and fall of WBCN in Boston. Alan Shartok will be back in the Congressional Corner, and we'll continue our JFK series by speaking about the Kennedy half century. All that, much more. Trust me on this. There's hours to go before we sleep. The Roundtable begins after news from the BBC and WAMC Regional News. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ray Graff, in for Joe Donahue. Time to begin this morning's panel discussion on topics in the news. Today, we're joined by Capital New York senior reporter Jimmy Vielkind and University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo. And you can join the conversation by emailing us at roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or our Facebook page, or you could tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. Twitter, very interesting last night as the results were coming in. We'll talk about that in a moment. First, we meet our panel. Rosemary, welcome back.
Thank you.
I can't believe you came back today. It's very nice.
Anytime.
And Jimmy Vielkind, who was on our Vox Pop program yesterday, it was a busy day. Boy, you didn't get much sleep yesterday.
Couple hours.
I saw one of your later tweets. Note to self, don't eat pizza.
Don't ever eat the pizza. This is, Rosemary can back me up here. If you eat the pizza, it's just going to sap your energy, right?
Well,
you need fruit, you need salad, you need vegetable-based meals for election night. Otherwise, you're just going to pass out around 11 p.m., which is really when your deadline hits.
That's such a loss of tradition, though. It's pizza tradition.
But you also can't stand the smell, you know?
No,
it's right there. And, oh, pizza.
Well, you know, and of course, the chocolate-covered peanuts. Yeah. So it worked out pretty well for you yesterday. Well, nice to have you both here. And let's start with the nuts and bolts and then get into the political ramifications. Jimmy, what were some of the big ones yesterday in New York?
So the big ones, all the ballot propositions passed with the exception of number 6, which would have allowed the judges to retire at age 80 as opposed to age 76 for the Supreme Court or 70 for the Court of Appeals. But looking kind of to the local elections on the statewide level. Here in Albany, we elected Kathy Sheehan as the first woman ever to lead the city and the fourth mayor since just before World War II.
Yeah.
Here in Albany, we like our mayors. We don't really do change.
I like to think that Erastus is rolling in his grave.
Why would he be rolling in his grave?
He did not promote women in office, including ones he liked very much.
I guess it was a long time ago.
And actually, that's an interesting topic because in other upstate cities, we see Lovely Warren, who was elected mayor of Rochester, the first woman to lead the Flower City. Stephanie Miner in Syracuse, reelected to a second term.
Mm-hmm.
So here in three of the biggest upstate cities, we now have women at the reins. Some of the more interesting races, because none of those races were really contested. Everyone knew that those wins were coming. I think Sheehan, after winning the Democratic primary over Corey Ellis earlier this year in September, essentially coasted to victory. I don't think the Republican Party even fielded a candidate.
Right.
The big news, though, were in two suburban counties around New York City, Nassau County, which is on Long Island, as well as Westchester and Rockland County. And Republicans ran the table in all three counties. Now, in 2009, which people might remember was the Tea Party year, this was when we first saw resentment of Obama and we saw a backlash to the Democratic sweeps of 2008. In 2009, Nassau County voters elected Ed Mangano over a guy named Tom Suozzi, an incumbent Democrat who was thought to have statewide ambitions and kind of shocked people.
Mm.
In Westchester County, Rob Astorino bested Andy Spano. And again, these were seen as big wins for the GOP because these suburban counties outside of New York City are the bellwethers for the state. And if the Republican Party is to have any shot at mounting a serious statewide challenge to Andrew Cuomo in 2014, they are going to need to fight and win in these counties. So the fact that they won last night is something that they are crowing about this morning. So Astorino takes a second term. Mangano takes a second term, beating Suozzi once again, who decided to come back and run again. And in Rockland County, just across the river to the west of Westchester County, retiring Republican Executive Scott Vanderhoff left an open seat, and Ed Day, a county legislator, bested David Freed. Shifting north and west to Erie County, of course, this is Buffalo. Republicans had a very good night. They retook the county legislature. Now, in 2011, Mark Poloncarz, a Democrat, was elected county executive, ousting Chris Collins, who's now a member of Congress. Mm-hmm. But the Democrats had held the legislature. So the Democrats had two of the three branches of government in Erie County. And now the Republicans have clawed their way to the top. Now, Erie County is a political animal unto its own. It's very factionalized. The term that's used is Beirut on the lake. There are about five factions of Democrats there, and they can never seem to quite get along. But Stephan Michaelou, the comptroller, held on against a challenge from Kevin Gaughan. As I said, the Republicans took the legislature, and the county sheriff, who has been a critic of Cuomo's SAFE Act, this is the gun control measure that passed in January of this year, cruised to re-election. So that one is probably particularly interesting for Cuomo because the saying is, as goes Cheektowaga, the Buffalo suburb, goes life, the universe, everything, and most importantly, New York elections. People in Buffalo are very big about that, and it is seen as a bellwether. Cuomo is particularly interested in Western New York, though, because recall that in 2010, when he sought election against Carl Paladino, a Buffalo real estate developer, he lost all those counties in Western New York. He also saw in 1994, when George Pataki beat his father, Mario Cuomo, Mario lost those counties in Western New York. So I think that Team Cuomo is going to be thinking of a plan to make sure that those GOP gains this year are not repeated next year.
On the time, I think it was the Capital Confidential, they had a great headline, Republicans look at the bright side of life. And Rosemary, is this rose-colored glasses, is this too much optimism?
No, I love listening to Jimmy talk because you can just see the political strategists at work. And I think they're absolutely looking at all of this stuff and figuring out, okay, we have something good to give away. Maybe we should look to Western New York. You know, if we have to pay attention someplace, do lots of appearances, it might be in Westchester County this year. I would expect to see a lot of activity there. So no, I don't think it's, I do have some skepticism about this whole idea of bellwethers. Can you really project from a small win in a small election, really?
Well, I mean, Nassau County, not small, right?
No. But we're talking about some minor race there, like comptroller. Yeah. Does that mean something significant? And the one thing that we don't account for, and I know you will later, Jimmy, is just the effect of personality. Like the Christie win comes from the fact that he is Christie.
He's Chris Christie.
He's a larger-than-life personality.
And it's really nice. Republicans are saying, oh, this is proof that a conservative can win even in big liberal areas with lots of minorities, but that's not it at all. I don't think that has anything to do with it.
I disagree slightly. I think you're absolutely right that you can't make an extrapolation now.
Right.
And a Democrat seeing this Republican chest thumping last night emailed me and said, don't you dare let them oversell it. He said there was one item on the ballot statewide where Andrew Cuomo was engaged, and that was casinos, and that won handily. And so you're absolutely right. But these are seeds. And the other thing is, this gives the party a base. It gives them a base of power. It gives them a base for fundraising. And it gives them a farm team. Now, Astorino is the closest thing the GOP has to a statewide challenger for Cuomo. His reelection keeps him on the field, keeps him on the bench. Whereas if he could have been kneecapped this year, it would have been much less worried.
Now, that was not a surprise, that win yesterday.
There wasn't any public polling on it, but Noam Bramson, the mayor of New Rochelle, was in what was thought to be a fairly close race against Astorino. Astorino, I believe, was a little bit better funded, but I took a pretty strong tea leaf on Tuesday morning when I heard Andrew Cuomo voting. He happens to vote where his girlfriend has a house in Westchester County in Mount Kisco, and he didn't say Bramson's name. When people said,
that
how'd you vote, what'd you do? He said, oh, I supported the Democratic candidate. It's like, uh-oh, red alert. Keep a guy at arm's length. Whereas if he had said, I'm voting for Noam Bramson, I encourage everyone to vote for Noam Bramson. Noam Bramson's going to be the best thing since sliced bread. Then that would have indicated to me.
Wow.
Well, he has a lot on his mind. Closer. He may have slipped his mind.
He can be forgetful.
No, not the Cuomo team.
But Rosemary, you brought up the interesting point about Christie. Yeah. And I think that you're right. In that, a lot of this has to do with personality, a lot of this has to do with individual candidates, but I think there's something to be said that you have blue areas of this country and Republicans being elected. And I think that Democrats need to realize that they cannot run a cookie cutter campaign against Republicans where they just say, oh, you're one of them Tea Party ilk. Oh, you're one of them shutdown people.
Seem to have worked in Virginia. But
let's talk about that
later in the second half hour.
We'll have a minute.
Casinos are coming, but not necessarily in Palmer, Massachusetts. We'll talk casinos coming up on the Roundtable. And welcome back to the Roundtable. 24 minutes after 9 o'clock, Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Rosemary Armeo is here. Also, Capital New York senior reporter Jimmy Vielkind, who is on roughly 45 minutes sleep. It was a big day for you and a big day, even though he wasn't on the ballot, for Governor Cuomo.
That's right. So Cuomo was the principal backer of Proposal 1, which would amend the state constitution, and I guess will amend the state constitution, to allow up to 7 casinos here in New York. Full-fledged, Las Vegas-style, table games, non-Indian-run casinos. And the first 4, per legislation, have been approved for areas north of Westchester County. And so what we're about to see in the coming weeks and months is the bidding process for those licenses and the competition among potential operators to do it. But this was a Cuomo idea. Cuomo pushed this. He mentioned it in his State of the State presentations. He negotiated with legislative leaders to set these parameters. He used strategery, to employ a George W. Bush word,
Does that make him the decider?
Right from the gut.
Okay.
But he employed strategery to craft this proposal in such a way as to minimize its enemies. So, for example, Native American tribes that already run casinos in upstate New York, these would be logical enemies. These would be people who have money and would have spent it against a referendum. Cuomo settled land claims and tax disputes with many of the tribes, and in exchange for that, he granted them exclusivity in broad swaths of the state. They sat on the sidelines. You'd look and you'd think about potentially Genting, which is the state's largest racetrack slot parlor, otherwise known as a racino, and that's at the Aqueduct site in Queens, right by Kennedy Airport.
Right.
It ended up spending, I think, at least $750,000 in support of this.
That's a drop in the bucket, though.
Because there is no immediate casino in New York City, and there's a belief that when those casinos come around, Genting will be in a hegemonic position to bid on it. And further, Cuomo's allies at the State Board of Elections pushed forward wording that appeared on the ballot yesterday, which didn't just say, well, would you like to approve casinos in the state? It said, would you like to approve casinos in this state, up to 7 of them, for the legislative purposes of promoting jobs, helping education, making babies smile, giving puppies to everyone, and putting apple pies on grandma's windowsill for us to smell.
We talked about this yesterday. Yeah. That was a little bit of favoritism in that.
A little bit overwrought, but there was a lawsuit challenging that wording, which was ultimately ruled out of order.
Right.
By virtue of timing constraints. So this is a big win for Cuomo, and it was a sound win. I don't remember the final margin. Things were still coming in late last night when I dozed off. But it was a solid win, and it was one where, as Karen DeWitt noted in her report earlier, the governor's allies really galvanized. And in my quick analysis, it seems that organized labor and the New York State AFL-CIO really went to the mat for this proposal. Ryan Delgado from the AFL-CIO told me yesterday that they had people at 300 high-volume poll sites in New York City meeting voters as they went in. Of course, they have to be a certain distance away, but meeting voters as they went in and saying, hey, flip your ballot over, one, because you've got 2 sides to this ballot, and vote yes on Proposal 1, vote yes on Proposal 5, a land swap for a mine in the Adirondacks.
Yeah,
and both of those proposals passed.
And we'll get back to casinos after this half hour. But the proposal that's also seen as a win for Governor Cuomo was the judges and the age of the judges' retirement.
That's right. And so
we only have about a minute and a half, Jimmy.
Well, then I'll be quick. So right now there are 3 judges on the Court of Appeals, the state's highest court, who will be forced to retire at their 70th birthday. Chief Judge Jonathan Lippman, who is 68, is one of them. But his term would extend such that if this had passed, he would have served for another decade. The fact that voters did not approve this referendum, which would have extended the mandatory retirement age from 70 to 80, means that Governor Cuomo, should he win a second term, will be able to appoint a majority of the Court of Appeals. This is hugely significant for a governor. Essentially, it gives him the ability to pack the court with his people. And if there are going to be battles with the legislature over separation of powers, this Moreland Commission, these ethical things, it ain't a bad time to have allies on the Court of Appeals.
It's similar to the president appointing members of the Supreme Court. Have we had a governor who has gotten a chance to appoint this many in
Pataki by sheer virtue of longevity?
That's right. You're right. Mm. You're right.
All right. Well, I tell you what. Let's take a break here, and then we're going to go back to casinos because in Palmer, Massachusetts, voters dealt a setback. In other words, they narrowly defeated a bid by Mohegan Sun to hold a resort casino to build one in western Massachusetts town of Palmer. Now, the results from Saratoga on Prop 1. At least late in the evening, as I was following your tweets and others, were surprising. They were against it. And I don't know how the final tally was in Saratoga, but there is, again, not in my backyard, even though statewide this won. So I want to break down where the votes were in the casino and Prop 1 and then move on to some of the bigger races. This, by the way, is the Roundtable on WAMC. Ominous music to welcome you back to the Roundtable. It's 9:36. It's the Roundtable panel this morning. One of our regulars, it's University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo back with us. Also, Capital New York senior reporter Jimmy Vielkind is here, and you're welcome to join the conversation by sending us an email, roundtable@wamc.org. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Jimmy, very quickly, your website looks good. It's Capital New York. .com, yes?
With an A-L, yes.
With an A-L. It's capital A-L, New York, .com. So we were talking about casinos and a big night for Governor Cuomo. The prop on the retirement of judges went down yesterday, and that was seen as a victory for Governor Cuomo, as well as Prop 1 on the casinos. Now, interestingly, in Palmer, Massachusetts, casino supporters, and also in East Boston, they rejected proposals. So in East Boston, they rejected proposals by Suffolk Downs Racetrack. And voters in Palmer, Mass, narrowly defeated a bid by Mohegan Sun to build a resort casino in that town. Now, the reason I bring this up, because it seems to indicate that there is a general acceptance of casino gambling as a concept, but not necessarily as a practical thing in one's backyard. And a prime example of this is Saratoga County and the way that vote broke last night on Prop 1.
That's right. And so it's widely expected the way these casino licenses are going to be doled out is that each region will be eligible to bid and one region will get two licenses. So Saratoga is in the capital region as defined by this legislation.
Right.
And it's widely thought that the biggest bidder is going to be the Saratoga Gaming and Raceway, or the Saratoga Racino, or it even calls itself now the Saratoga Casino.
Yep.
They have said that they're going to bid. They've announced plans to bid. And in fact, one of their co-owners, James Featherston, known to everyone as Feathers, has talked about it and was one of the leading advocates for this referendum. But and I'm just looking here at the State Board of Elections site. The referendum did not pass in Saratoga County. The vote, according to the site, is 25,488 against and 21,956 against.
Okay.
And this is an interesting trend.
21,004.
Yes, correct. 21,956 for.
Okay.
And this is an interesting trend. Capital region counties and upstate counties, a lot of them were either tepidly for or against. In Albany County, the measure failed. In Rensselaer County, it gained slightly. In Schenectady County, it failed narrowly. But the big boosters of this referendum won on Long Island. In Nassau County, it was 2-1. 2-1 voters. And it was a very big margin. It was, in fact, 163,000 to 80,000 voters, approximately, according to the State Board of Elections website. And in Queens and Brooklyn, the outer boroughs of New York City. This is where that passed, and interestingly enough, this is where there will be no casinos. Now, the exception to that is the lower Hudson Valley, Sullivan County, Putnam County, Rockland County to a lesser extent, and Orange County. This is the heart of the old what's called the Borscht Belt,
yeah,
where you had large resorts catering to New York City, largely Jewish vacation goers that have essentially all melted away, as many things in upstate New York have melted away over time. But there are investors who hope to turn some of these old resorts, including Neville, including Grossinger's, into destinations again built around casinos. Voters here supported the proposition. But again, looking at the raw numbers, Brooklyn, Queens, Long Island, where there won't be casinos.
So right, it's now easier to vote for it in a place that wasn't going to have it.
That's right.
Basically,
yeah. Yeah. Not in my backyard.
Not in my backyard.
So
right.
As this plays out, now in Massachusetts, you know, there are siting committees, if you will, that sort of have focused the attention on spots. Governor Cuomo's deals with the Native American tribes have already sort of focused the spots where these will be. Mm-hmm. So as it moves forward, if Saratoga, and Jimmy and I took calls from on Vox Pop yesterday, and there were people from Saratoga who were not happy about Prop 1 mm-hmm. yesterday, prior to the results. As this moves forward, what sort of a local input will there be? In other words, if the folks in Saratoga don't want it there, do they even, in fact, have a say at this point?
That is, in fact, so what's going to happen is the State Gaming Commission is going to select the sites where these casino franchises are doled out. And Governor Cuomo has said that local support is going to be a key part of what makes a successful bid. Now, there is no formalized referendum process like we've seen in Massachusetts, and as you note, where we've seen two proposals get voted down. Mm-hmm. But you're going to need the affirmation of a municipality, either its governing body or preferably polls of its people showing that support. So if that is the case, and that's what we're seeing from these returns, and now, granted, that was Saratoga County. It wasn't necessarily Saratoga Springs okay. or the town of Saratoga, which would
Good
be
point.
A more micro, a more microscopically focused point. And also we have to control for turnout, people who voted in this election versus who would maybe vote just dedicated on that very mm-hmm. issue. But it certainly seems to indicate that you'd have to do some more salesmanship in the locality if you want that to go through.
And
now,
spend some more money, as they did in Massachusetts. I mean,
oh,
there was a boatload of money spent on campaigns in Springfield, West Springfield, mm-hmm. Palmer, just to get people on board.
I think the campaign consultants are, as usual, the real winners here.
Cha-ching. Indeed. It was a big day for female mayors in New York State. And we had Rochester, Albany, Syracuse, right. all Democrats.
Saratoga Springs.
Yeah. So and then smaller races, Colony, Paula Mahan is back in for a fourth term now.
In a walk,
easily, yeah. And so I think this is good? Is that your question?
No, that was not my question.
Okay.
That would be a leading and a terrible question. No, is this things finally evening out, or is this
I think this is a result of a lot of work and a concerted effort. New York has had a tradition of wonderful, strong women politicians. Eleanor Roosevelt, I would include in that. Hillary Clinton, Kirsten Gillibrand, and all of them have urged and pushed other women to get in. And it just hasn't happened. Even we're beginning to see some mayoral wins right now, but they still are a small force in the state legislature. Jimmy, you know that. And so why is that? And women's groups have been looking at that for a long time. Part of it is just it isn't just men who are against women in office. It's women themselves. I helped my mother with her ballot yesterday, and she goes, "Oh, I'll vote for him when she gets to coroner." And because she says, "I think men make better coroners." I go, "Mom,
watched Quincy. She knows."
Apparently, but there are just ideas like that this is somehow in politics is a improper job for women, or that it calls for skills and time that women don't have, especially if they're busy having children and raising families. And it's an old-fashioned, outmoded idea. And I think you're beginning to see changes because we feminists have raised some of our own sons now who are more right-thinking and are willing to give women a chance. And that said, I think there's going to be a lot of scrutiny of what happens in Albany and Syracuse and Rochester in the next few years. And we may be back talking on this program about mistakes or missteps by women.
Well, we got to fill time.
Yeah. Actually, two of the reporters in our bureau, Jessica Bakeman and Jessica Limo, who mm-hmm. you will note are both women, they looked at this very question. And one of the things that the statistics show that I've been trying to pull it up on my phone, and I haven't been able to grab
here.
It immediately.
Have a hard copy.
We have
here
on paper.
How about
you
that?
Know,
this
that
paper
stuff.
Yeah,
it's
how we roll here
crazy.
At WAMC.
But according to the New York State Conference of Mayors, 8 of the state's 62 cities are led by female mayors, and it's about 15% in villages. In the state legislature, Rosemary, it's actually a little better. It's 22% of legislators.
That's very small, though.
Which is low because, of course, it's 50%
exactly.
or 51% of the
population.
But what women's groups and actually Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, who has been very vocal on this issue, point to, is that you're getting women into the pipeline.
Right.
You're getting them into the pipeline. So you now have Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner. Why not next Congresswoman Stephanie
exactly.
Miner?
She'll
you now have you now have Onondaga County Executive Joni Mahoney. I'm not being partisan here. Why not Congresswoman Joni Mahoney?
And a real look at this might take a look at who or how many women are serving on boards of education
mm-hmm.
and town boards, because that's even the smaller, the lower stepping stone.
Absolutely. Once you start on the ladder, you move up the ladder, and you can't move to the top of the ladder or the upper rungs of the ladder until you start on the
bottom. Yeah, you have to learn it. And, you know, there's just nothing unusual about this. Women for years ran the volunteer groups. They organized. They put clubs. Civic society in this country is based on the organization of women. That is politics.
It's certainly not unusual, but what is interesting is it's party politics. Look at Albany.
Right.
You know, the Democratic machine said Kathy Sheehan is our one.
Mm-hmm.
And so perhaps the interesting thing here is that the old parties
right.
are, in fact, going, well, let's look at the demographics right. here, and let's not be foolish and exclusionary, and let's just do what will solidify.
And you're right, Albany is a really interesting place to look at. We referred to it earlier. You know, for years, Polly Noonan operated. She's the grandmother of our current senator. She operated in Albany, but never in an official position. That simply was not allowed. It wasn't seen as proper at the time.
Right. And it's
different.
Right. But at the same time, again, Jessica Limo and Jessica Bakeman spoke to a lot of female politicians, a lot of mm-hmm. these women who were elected, and Sheehan said that even running now in 2013 in Albany, someone slammed a door in her face and said something to the effect of, women can't be mayor.
Really?
So there's still a hostility.
I think this would not be a surprise to any woman reading the story. And you will remember Hillary Clinton put up with unbelievable sexism.
Did she cry? Did she not cry?
Yeah.
Iron my shirt.
What is she wearing? Oh, her hair. Oh, my. And oh, those thighs. She's got to do something about those thighs.
She still gets
crazy.
That. Today.
She does, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's all kinds of look. The media has a real big role in this, too. The way the media treats women politicians is appalling. I mean, I am no fan of Sarah Palin, but I do not think that we should be commenting on her legs and her dress and all the stuff we do. We don't do that to her opponent.
Yeah.
And it's true, whether you're a Palin or a Clinton, you're going to come in for this kind of ridiculous scrutiny.
But this is the media.
It is the media.
Christy, a heavy man. You hear about this all the time in either positive ways, oh, he looks good. Or in negative ways, well, he's gained weight.
That's a health issue. And I notice you're calling him heavy now. When the mic is off, he's fat.
Well, I'm heavy too. But the point is, this is an issue, and this is the way the media does things. And we'll talk about Christie and Republicans and McAuliffe coming up on the roundtable. Let's take a short break, Mr. Hopper. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, New York, a classroom in the wild helping schools, organizations, and individuals reconnect with nature, history, and the arts. AshokanCenter.org. Dr. Arthur Falk, Albany and Saratoga, facial plastic surgeon and laser specialist focusing on minimally invasive procedures, including Ulthera skin tightening and Cool Sculpting non-surgical body contouring. AboutFaceDOC.com. And the Odyssey Bookshop, South Hadley, Massachusetts, celebrating 50 years as a local independent bookstore with festivities on Friday, November 8th, including a scavenger hunt at 5:30, and a pirate pajama party and story time at 6:30. OdysseyBKS.com for info.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 9:49 is the time. Rosemary Armeo is here, Capital New York senior reporter Jimmy Vielkind, Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. You can email us at roundtable@wamc.org if you'd like to weigh in. And speaking of weighing in, Chris Christie coasts to his second term as governor of New Jersey.
That was weak.
Well, no. Huh? We discussed the fat issue.
Yes.
And didn't say rolls to a second term.
Oh, waddles. Ouch.
That's terrible.
Like that.
No,
sorry,
that's terrible.
And right there.
As a man of prolific poundage myself, I'm allowed to say this. However, he won handily. And before we get to the issue of 2016 and whether America is ready to abandon that bias and vote for a heavy man, let's talk about New Jersey, what this means for him. And now he's calling himself a conservative once again. And what it means for Republicans who now all of a sudden are filled with hope this morning in parts of New York.
Yeah, so, I think a few things about this. I think that it shows that Republicans can win in a blue state. It shows that Democrats can't paint all Republicans together with the same brush, and that maybe we're going to see more blowback over this government shutdown, which polls show Americans blame on Republicans in the House. I think we'll see more blowback on that next year in the 2014 elections for Congress. And indeed, listeners are already hearing about that on the Congressional Corner from people like Sean Eldridge, Bill Owens, Paul Tonko. Mm. But I also think that this is, there's this struggle within the Republican Party. And it's happening in New York, but it's happening in a more profound way on a national level. In 2009, you saw a lot of disaffected, predominantly working class people who were mostly just really, really, really miffed about their poor lot in the economy. And they organized in this sort of populist conservative movement, the Tea Party. And of course, we saw kind of the other side of the spectrum, but essentially the same thing in 2011 with the Occupy movement. People who are just pissed off.
Not covered as heavily, but yeah, definitely.
And so the question for the GOP is, what is the party? Does this, and the Tea Party comes with a very strong, self-reliant, anti-government strain. You're all the same strain. You Republicans who've been in for too long, you are part of the problem. You are not responsive to me. Rip it down, burn it down, this kind of strain. And there are some very, very less iconoclastic things, very strong civil liberties views, from guns to spying to other things. So, but what we see is Chris Christie is calling himself a conservative, and that's fine.
Yeah.
And I think that
on many issues he is, as
right.
Rosemary will point out in a moment.
And the first blush analysis of that is if he wants to run and be a contender for the Republican nomination in 2016, he knows that in those primaries, the first thing he has to do is not be outflanked on his right side.
Yeah.
So immediately he's going to posture and position himself for that.
God, didn't we see enough of that with Mitt Romney?
But he's not a Tea Party guy. He's not a Tea Party guy. Rob Astorino, again, he'll call himself a conservative. He's no Tea Party guy. And I think what you could be seeing in the bluer parts of the country in the Northeast is an erosion of that influence. And then.
Okay. All interesting points. But, you know, Jimmy, you're talking about political strategy. All of that is important for the Republican Party. I think Christie is out of that. Christie is a unique politician, the way that Obama was, the way that Hillary Clinton may be. She touches on it, and that it's him. Voters are responding to him, not to how he's positioning himself or his strategy. He was a hero during Sandy. He has taken a position I don't personally agree with, and others don't, but you have to admire how consistent he has been, even on abortion and on gay marriage. And in a way, I think he's really smart, too, because he knows perfectly well that he's not a danger in those areas. There is going to be gay marriage in this country. We already are well on the way to it. There are protections on abortion. We're even seeing courts respond to that. It does not matter what he says, so he can take his personal position on it. Even the way he's handled fat is interesting. He had a bypass operation. He was very careful in how he announced it, but has been somewhat transparent about it all, knowing that his health and that his appearance will be issues.
That was a gastric bypass, yes, not a heart bypass.
No, I'm sorry. Did I misspeak?
You just said bypass.
Yeah, a gastric bypass, you know, the staple your stomach.
Sure.
And get
the old Al Hurt surgery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Al Roker.
Well, that gets to a question about voter bias. So in you know, you hear America ready or not ready to vote for a woman. America ready or not ready to vote for a fat man. So, coming down to 16, a potential Hillary Clinton against Chris Christie, what happens then?
Well, we clearly weren't ready to vote for a black man in 2008.
There
and
you
how
go.
How many times did we
Jimmy,
hear people
there
talk
you go.
About
yeah,
it?
And
second term, we have
it's because
Barack
he
Obama.
Was an extraordinary personality who went
right.
who went above that. I mean,
right.
I mean, I look at that one. We'd rather vote for a black man. I thought that was our biggest taboo rather than a woman.
Right.
So Clinton and Christie would be interesting. But
very
say,
interesting.
Let's say it was Andrew Cuomo versus Christie. I think Cuomo would win, and I think looks would have a lot to do with it. You look at the two of them together; they're both extremely effective and popular governors. But which one sends signals of being vital and on the job and with it and cool and hip? It's not the fat man.
Interesting. Very interesting. All right. Well, I'm sure we'll get letters, and it's roundtable at WAMC.org or just to contact Rosemary directly.
And William Howard Taft is rolling in his grave.
Yes,
and rolling and rolling.
All right. All right. Thank you very much. All right. A couple of minutes left. Terry McAuliffe won in Virginia, a little closer than we thought based on the polling. And again, polling can be skewed many ways leading up to an election. The competitor, and it's Cuccinelli, right? Is that how you say
yes,
it?
Yes, Ken Cuccinelli,
right.
The attorney general.
He was aligned at least ostensibly with Tea Party. He lost. Again, everyone's quick to put a stamp. This was a validation of X. This was a repudiation of Y. Does this mean anything?
I take a couple things from it. The first is, Virginia in presidential elections has been increasingly in play, whereas even as recently as 2000, it would have not have been in play. It would have just been a Sunni Republican. And what we've seen from that is the growth of the Washington, D.C. suburbs, right. Places like Alexandria, places like Arlington. And you have seemingly left-leaning voters who are there. So I think this is an affirmation that Virginia is in play and that maybe it's even starting to lean Democratic and has to be taken in that context for 2016. The other thing that I think is interesting is that McAuliffe, known in political circles as the Macker, is a long, long, long... Just a nickname, you know? Why do they call me Jimmy? You know? But so... McAuliffe has been a long ally and associate of the Clinton family, and this was seen as sort of a dry run for Hillary 2016 and its operation and its people and its tactics. And here we've
they
seen success.
Practicing.
Right.
Wow, interesting.
And so, you know, we saw Hillary Clinton, we saw Barack Obama line up for McAuliffe. I believe Clinton did, Hillary did an explicit endorsement of
Biden
McAuliffe.
Biden was down there a lot.
Precisely. And so I think that here you see the Clintons gaining an ally again in an important swing.
Well, they've
state.
Always had him as an ally, yeah?
Well, now he's the governor and an ally.
Governor, ally. Mm-hmm. All right, Jimmy, what do you take? You have about 20 seconds to wrap up what you have taken from the election yesterday.
Oof. What I've taken from the election yesterday.
Besides pizza,
I think again, I'll be interested to see how much of this GOP chest thumping is going to be justified and what effects we're going to see, if any. Of course, in New York State, on the state level, next year we're going to see a very vicious battle for the state Senate and who controls it. And in the weeks prior to Election Day, we started to see Andrew Cuomo lining up against Republicans and the Republican-allied Democrats in the IDC who have controlled the state Senate. So will Cuomo be more bold in those attempts, or will he, as he seems to have done, sort of acquiesce to GOP control? So I'm going to watch that dynamic.
Okay,
closely.
And is there a Western New York problem for the governor?
Well,
and how does this play into Lieutenant Governor Duffy's departure or non-departure?
Well,
and, of course, now we don't have any time left to explore that. So maybe next time. Jimmy Vielkind of Capital New York. It's Capital with an A-L, newyork.com. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Ray. Thanks for having me.
Rosemary Armeo, splendid as always. Usually when I fill in, you're in Rio or something, so it's nice to have you here.
Oh, my gosh.
Very nice.
Such a colony.
All right. Very good. Roundtable at WAMC.org is the email address. Oh, there's more. There's lots more. I don't know what it is, but I'll find out when I turn the page in a moment.